Our next guest is author Tom Colbert, and Tom wrote a book a couple of years ago called Pan Africa, Across the Sahara in 1941 with Pan Am. And this is an interesting story that probably doesn't get enough exposure, because Pan American Airways, obviously a worldwide airline, played a pretty significant role in the early days of World War II. So, Tom, how did you discover this story and kind of get wrapped into this?
Well, listen, it's a great story, and I was very fortunate to be able to get into the story and understand who was doing it all. But before I do that, let me make a comment about Steve and his fantastic group up here. I've been sitting in the grass out here listening to your interviews, very informative and somewhat entertaining. So it's been really great, and I congratulate you and your staff.
Yeah,
doing a great job up
here. Thank you very much, Tom, and also Wayne and Greg.
Yep, just talked to Greg, and they're they're doing
the rest
a great
of the
job
day as well.
Oh, okay,
awesome.
All right.
Well, thank
you. Well, listen, yes. So I was an Air Force officer, pilot, served 21 years in the Air Force, and I became an Air Force Africanist. And by that I mean they sent me to school, and they gave me a diplomatic passport, and they sent me to Africa to work, and when I say work, they also gave me a Beech King Air to fly and operate in Africa and support American embassies throughout the African continent and the Middle East. Part of that job was flying out into these very unique Central Africa airstrips, places like El Fasher, Sudan, and Khartoum, and different places. And I kept asking the question, well, why was there an airfield in El Fasher, Sudan? And as I talked to more people, I found out that it was a World War II effort. And it turns out that after I retired, I was able to continue my research on this. Turns out that it was part of the Pan American Airways contracted support to the British Empire in the early days of World War II. So Juan Tripp was the president of Pan American, and he, Winston Churchill, and FDR came to an agreement that Pan Am could help the Brits move airplanes from the UK to their colonies in West Africa, reassemble them, and fly them to Cairo, where they're being used to prevent Rommel from taking over North Africa. And for the Brits, it was a really severe issue, because if Rommel were to take Cairo and the Suez Canal, that would just bode really bad things for the British Empire trying to support their efforts around the globe. So Pan Am had experience with long-range austere operations, navigation. Mm-hmm. They had some longer range aircraft, and they had people who knew how to operate them. And they had a ground operation also, so they were able to provide ground support, air support, everything that's needed to fly across Central Africa in 1941. So this was before Pearl Harbor.
Right.
The U.S. was a quote-unquote neutral non-combatant. And FDR and Churchill managed to work around that somewhat. And you can imagine what was going on back in those days. But so these were American civilians operating across Central Africa.
So in these remote airfields, they really had to bring everything they needed with them. There was nothing there.
Everything. So you had weathermen, mm-hmm. you had cooks, you had mechanics, you had construction workers, you had bulldozers, you had... So most of the material was procured by Pan Am offices in New York City. Mm-hmm. The heavy stuff went on ship to West Africa. And some of the lighter stuff was loaded up on Boeing 314s. Pan Am had the four-engine Boeing 314s of those days. And we actually have photographs of the aircraft loading up at in New York City at the Port Authority there, on their way to Africa. So what they did is they were able to fly from New York down the East Coast of the United States, across the Caribbean area, mm-hmm. and they would use airfields in eastern Brazil. And so Natal, Brazil was a facility there. And then that was the shortest route to cross the South Atlantic, was from eastern Brazil to the western bulge of Africa. And they started off with the Boeing 314s. And then as the war progressed, the War Department and the ability to produce more aircraft, more personnel, this is after Pearl Harbor, then more four-engine aircraft could cross the South Atlantic. And then, of course, Ascension Island was built at that time, so you had all kinds of airplanes crossing the South Atlantic. And then even including the Navy provided aircraft carriers that P-40s were ferried across the South Atlantic, flown off the carrier into West Africa, and some of those airplanes ended up in China with General Chenault. So it's a great story. You mentioned that not very many people know about it. And I'm on the EAA Speakers Bureau.
Right.
And so I go out and I give lectures on this quite frequently and all over the United States. And one of the biggest questions I get in the Q&A section is, why haven't we heard about this? And I like to tell the story that the Army Air Corps eventually took over the operation from Pan Am.
Right.
And then when the war was over with, the Army wrote the history.
Right.
And you can imagine how much effort that they put into telling some of the material that I've read reads like the Army took over this operation from a civilian contractor.
Yep. It doesn't say who or how detailed it was.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah.
How long did this go on? 1941 through
the first movement, so the contracts were signed in August of 41.
Okay.
In September, planes and equipment were being moved. And then Pan Am lost the contract in December of 42.
Okay.
And then the Army Air Corps had ginned up. This was a year after Pearl Harbor. You had men in, you know, the draft, and the Army Air Corps was able to take it over.
Yeah. You mentioned that they're all civilians, but if I remember right from reading the book, there are some photos where some of the Pan Am employees look like they're actually wearing uniforms.
Yeah, they had very uniform-like gear to wear. Some of it was medical, like they wore high boots because of the mosquitoes and malaria.
Yeah.
And they had mosquito netting, you know, to try to protect them.
Yeah.
But they had a patch that says PAA on their patch, and that was it. I mean, that was they wore khaki shorts, and they looked almost like a military uniform. That's correct. Yeah.
What are some of the good stories that you've been able to uncover? I'm sure there are hardships and moving things.
How much time do we have?
but maybe some of the lighter moments that happened.
As most Americans would do in a very austere location, they would have pets.
Okay.
So many of them had monkeys. One had giraffe, and several of them had baby lions. So one of the really austere posts had a baby lion called Leo.
Okay.
And what they would do is Leo was a nice pet, and when a new co-pilot came up and landed there, and the crew would say, well, we got to stay on the airplane. Cole, you go inside and sign us in. He would walk across the tarmac. The guys there would release the lion, and the lion would lunge after the guy, the co-pilot. And as lions do, they would take their paw and knock their feet out from under them, and then jump on them and lick them. And they said it was a great opportunity for a good laugh, but it also caused a lot of dirty laundry.
That's right.
But so Leo the lion was one of them. Becoming a giraffe jockey was another one. How do you climb up on it? And we in the book we actually have a series of photographs of a fellow coaxing a giraffe to lower his head, jump on his neck. The giraffe would go up and it would slide down and become a giraffe jockey. but other than that, there's some really interesting sidelines also. During the April 1942, there was a call for support for airplanes to go to China to help General Chenault. Mm-hmm. What else happened in April of 1942?
The Doolittle Raid.
Doolittle Raid. And I often ask myself, how did Jimmy Doolittle get from China in April of 42 to Washington, D.C. in June receive the Congressional Medal of Honor? It turns out they flew on these Pan Am DC-3s across Central Africa to West Africa, the Boeing 314. And I was able to verify this a couple years ago when David Thatcher, who at that time was the second remaining alive Doolittle Raider, came and attended one of my presentations at the Museum of Mountain Flying in Missoula, Montana.
Oh, my.
So David lived in Montana. And he came in, and when I got to this part of the story, I went over to David, and I said, "Now, David, how did you get from China back to the United States?" And he said, "Well, we got on these DC-3s that were piloted by Americans, and we crossed Central Africa and came back on the Boeing 314 to the United States." And I said, "Well, thank you very much, David. You have
you got it from the firsthand source."
Yeah, firsthand. Yeah.
Absolutely so awesome. If someone would like to get a copy of the book, how can they find it?
Okay, I used to have an app, a website, but I no longer do. So my email address is T as in Tom, C as in Charlie, A I R C as in Charlie, at gmail.com.
Okay.
Yeah. Before I leave, I want to mention one other thing, non-book related, if I may.
Sure.
I had lived in Virginia for many years, and I worked at the Pentagon and did all the stuff in Africa. But I'm now living in Wisconsin, and there's some really interesting things going on in Wisconsin about aviation. Mm-hmm. First of all, let me mention the Bong Veterans Historical Center in Superior. Mm-hmm. And they have an option going called Mission Marge. And they're recovering parts of the airplane that Richard Bong flew in the Pacific in the World War II and became the Ace of Aces.
Right.
So that they have now recovered a piece of that airplane. It was in the jungle in New Guinea, and it's here at EAA.
Oh, okay.
It's at the Pitcairn hangar. At the other airfield behind the museum.
Yep, at Pioneer Airport. Tom Culbert, thank you for joining us. Thanks for moving to Wisconsin.
I want to thank you and your crew again for having the great weather.
Yes.
You guys pushed all the smoke out.
It's all good.
You do good work.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, Steve.
This is From the Stand. I'm Steve Bose, and you're listening to EIA Radio.